Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has two causes on its oral submission docket. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Laura Patricia Canavaca de Chica and others versus Diagnostic Center Hospital Incorporated and others. A certified question from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. And Robin Denise Odra Stiegel and others versus Stella A. Odra from Harris County. In each of these causes, the court has allotted 20 minutes for oral argument for each side. The petitioner or appellant may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal argument. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these causes. The arguments are being recorded for the court's convenience by audio tape, and you may make application with our clerk if you desire to listen to those tapes. The court is now ready to hear argument from appellants in Canavati de Chica versus Diagnostic Center Hospital.
May it please the court, Mr. Thomas Black will present argument for petitioners. Petitioners should reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm Tom Black with Soles & Wallace from San Antonio. This is a health care liability claim now being prosecuted against five health care providers pursuant to the Medical Liability and Insurance Improvement Act, which is Article 4590I. And the issue, the basic issue that was certified by the Fifth Circuit is whether limitations bars the action against three of the defendants who are the appellees here, that is Drs. Davis, Burbridge, and Bernese. The relevant sections of the act are, I guess, kind of collaterally, section 10.01, which sets up what is described as an absolute 10-year limit or 2-year limitations, and it is acknowledged by everyone to eliminate the discovery rule in these kind of cases, and has been so designated or approved by this court in most cases. Then we have more specifically section 4.01A, which is a notice provision, requires advance notice of any claim 60 days before filing suit. And in the case of Sheps versus Presbyterian Hospital, which is cited in all of the briefs, a 1983 opinion decision by this court, that was held to be a mandatory requirement but not jurisdictional. That is, the result is to be an abatement of the lawsuit, not dismissal. And there's been no serious question of that holding since 1983, 10 years ago. Then the really pivotal provision is section 4.01C, which states that the notice tolls limitations for 75 additional days, and that, quote, this tolling shall apply to all parties and potential parties. The facts in this case are relatively simple, and they're stipulated facts. Were stipulated in the district court, the United States District Court. The notice under 4.01A was given to two of these defendants before the 2 years expired, and there's no dispute but what the statute was, the limitations was told for 75 additional days as to them. And then during that 75 days, notice was given to the appellees in this case, and suit was filed before the expiration of two years and 75 days. The suit was filed in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Texas, and that court granted a summary judgment for these appellees, which was appealed to the Fifth Circuit, and of course the Fifth Circuit has certified some questions about the case to this court for advice, I suppose. The appellants, as I have said, are relying on language in the language in section 4.01C, applying the 75-day tolling to all parties and potential parties. Appellees, we say, are definitely in that category. There's no possible definition of parties or potential parties which would exclude the appellees. Thus, when the notice was given and the suit was filed against Appalese within 2 years and 75 days of their last treatment, all of this is stipulated, it was timely filed. An appellant submits that this is the clear and intended meaning of the provision. The Appalese are claiming that what appellants are arguing does not give meaning to all of the provisions of Section 4.01. What they're focusing on is in Section 4.01A requires notice, and then the prefix to Section 4.01C provides that notice as provided herein or something like that tolls the statute, and that those two sections read together are rendered meaningless by what we're arguing that the notice, that the tolling applies to the appellees who got their notice later. Now the problem with their contention that we're rendering something meaningless is that basically what they say we are rendering meaningless, or that our construction renders meaningless, is not in Section 4.01A. It's just simply not in the statute. The statute does not require notice within 2 years from the date of last treatment. It is not a limitation statute. It's not connected to the limitation statute. It requires notice within 60 days of filing the lawsuit. This is a notice provision which this court has said results in an abatement, not dismissal. So 401A is rendered meaningless only if it's amended to add notice must be given within 2 years of the last treatment. What is really rendered meaningless is their contention, and that the last clause of Section 4.01C regarding parties and potential parties, they are wanting to render meaningless.
Mr. Black, let me see if I understand the facts. Were the new defendants, let me start with, you said two of the defendants were sued within, or they received notice
they
within
received
the
notice.
2 year statute of limitations.
Yes, sir.
And no question then that there's a 75-day additional time added to the end of the statute of limitations.
That's correct. They're still in the lawsuit and they're not,
now,
they didn't
during
follow
that. During that 75-day period, then the other defendants were added to the lawsuit, or they were just sent notice?
No, they were sent notice, and all of them were sued together. They weren't added to the lawsuit. All of these appellees were sued together with the two defendants that we had given notice to. So during the 75 days, what happened was we gave notice to appellees and sued everybody.
Okay. Oh, so... Okay, the notice to a couple of them went out before the end of the tolling period.
That's correct. Nope, it went out before the end of the 2 years.
Yeah, the end of the 2 years, I'm sorry. And then that extended the statute for 75 days. During that 75-day period, everybody was sued.
That's right.
And then there was a few that you hadn't sent notice to, and you sent notice to them.
And we sent notice to them before the end of the 75 days, which I regard as very important.
The Fifth Circuit in their certification to us says that there is an apparent conflict between 401A and C, and that one should be dominant and one not. You disagree with that?
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
How can they be reconciled?
I think they can be reconciled by the realization that 4.01A is addressing only the notice. It is not addressing anything about tolling limitations, and that all it requires is the giving of notice.
As provided in the Act.
And that's 401C.
401C requires
yes.
It be as provided in the Act.
Well,
and
it
401A
seems.
Requires notice to each person, each health care provider against whom you claim.
Yes, Your Honor. And our position is, I think the facts are, we did give notice pursuant to 4.01A to all of the appellees. Because 401A doesn't say you have to give notice before 2 years from the last date of treatment. It says give notice 60 days before filing the lawsuit. That's it. And we did that. we gave the notice within the 75 days to the appellees. We gave the notice to the two defendants before the end of 2 years. That told the statute for 75 days as to all parties and potential parties. And before the end of that 75 days, we gave notice to the remaining appellees. Now, if they want to cut out that last phrase, this tolling should apply to all parties or potential parties, because their contention is that that phrase has no function and no meaning. Alternatively, what they say is we must interpret this to mean that potential parties are only people that the plaintiff was not aware of during the two-year limitations. The problem with that is that that's not even hinted at by the legislature. It would just have to be tacked on as an amendment to the legislation. And the other problem is that if it had been presented to the legislature, I think it would have been summarily rejected, because what it does is add a very complicated yet collateral fact issue to an already complicated type of lawsuit. Were the Cannavatis aware of Dr. Bernazian during the 2 years? And that would take 2 days to try that.
Construction of it, which is that potential parties would be parties who got notice for whom the plaintiff decided not to sue.
That is not my construction, no, Your Honor. Potential parties, to me, are parties who were involved in the health care of the particular claimant, patient.
But why shouldn't it be parties to whom the plaintiff gave notice, but after the effect of the notice, decided not to sue?
Your Honor, my answer to that is that that is not a common law or dictionary definition of potential parties. Potential parties are people who are involved in a lawsuit or might be involved in a lawsuit. And there, as the Fifth Circuit pointed out, the phrase has not been defined in the statute. Therefore, we have to look to the common law and or the dictionary, and there's simply no definition that would say this is only people who were given notice but not sued. And that would, again, it seems to me, Your Honor, would render the statute, the provision, meaningless, because if they were given notice and not sued, why toll the limitations as to?
Because you might sue.
But if we...
If you don't know, that's the point. You're supposed to give them notice and then find out. Isn't that the point of notice? That somebody, you might actually resolve it before a lawsuit.
That's right. The point of notice is, and I think that's also a very strong point, the point of notice is for negotiation and settlement. And this court held in Sheps and has held ever since that purpose can be accomplished by the 60-day abatement. And therefore, if no notice is given, abatement is mandatory upon motion and request, but it does not require dismissal.
Ms. Flack, do you have under your interpretation of the statute, would you not have a problem where the lawsuit is filed at the two-year mark? Our courts put an interpretation on it and says, okay, but you can abate later for that 60-day period.
Mm-hmm.
Would your interpretation not create a situation where, as to all these other doctors, the statute of limitations has clearly run, but you do something when you give that 60-day notice that recreates a 75-day new period in which to sue them? Wouldn't your interpretation run afoul of really having where you can restart your right to sue just by sending another notice to somebody, even though the statute is run as to those new parties?
Only for 75 days. I think that's, if I understand you, I think that's correct. I think that's what the legislature intended.
So you believe it would be reasonable to do this, that we could be 3 years into a lawsuit, 5 years after the statute, 2 years after the statute's run, but you can create a 75-day window by just notifying somebody?
No, Your Honor, that's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you give notice to one or more of potential parties or parties within 2 years, that for a window of 75 days you can bring in more parties. Not.
Okay.
Now, there are
75 days would have to be tacked on to the 2 year statute of limitations.
Oh, yes,
but you
They are claiming in their briefs that this will go on forever, but it won't. It's a 75-day tolling for all parties and potential parties. And our position is that the reason the legislature did this, and of course nobody knows why they did it because it's not in the statutory or legislative history, is that they were abolishing the discovery rule by 10.01, and they just wanted to give a little slack to a plaintiff that found out about one or more defendants and maybe knew about more of them but wanted more time to investigate the case. He knew A and B were responsible. He knew C and D were involved in the treatment, but he wanted more time to look at it. And that is something that can happen, and it actually did happen in the case of Rhodes versus McCarran, which we've cited in our brief.
Are there any other questions at this time?
Oops. So that's the shortest 15 minutes I ever do. Thank you.
I'm just going by the line. Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Ms. Corrine McCullough and Mr. John Ellis present arguments for the respondent. Ms. McCullough will open for the first 10 minutes.
Actually, you're the appellee, as I understand it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Terminology is sort of that question.
May it please the court. My name is Corrine McCullough from the law firm of Gieselstone, Parker & Lyman. We represent Dr. George Panasian as appellee and defendant in the courts below. I will address the first certified question on behalf of all three appellee defendants. John Ellis will address the second question. We'd also like to take the opportunity at this point to express our appreciation to the court for accepting these certified questions from the Fifth Circuit. The answers do affect and will affect every provider of health care services to the citizens of Texas and ultimately to every citizen of Texas who believes that he may have a claim for medical negligence based on his health care. The briefs have fully addressed the case law and the issues before the court. The first certified question asked whether does proper notice to one physician or health care provider within the 2 year statute of limitations, toll limitations for 75 days, as to any other physician or health care provider who are potential parties. We say no. Unless proper notice has been given to the physician or health care provider who is a party or potential party. We believe that a party or a potential party is one who has been noticed within the 2 years and sued, or who has been noticed and can be sued within the 75 days extension of time, not one who has no notice until within the 75 days, not one who has no notice until then that he may be the subject of a health care claim. There are two older cases by the Commission of Appeals, which are not cited in the brief, which do speak to a definition of parties. Those are Allied Drug at 49 Southwest 704 and Southern Surety at 44913. And I think if we look at the definitions of party within that context and then analogize to this situation, it is clear that a party or a potential party is a party to the record, those who have been served with citation, i.e. notice, or who have entered their appearance, they have been sued. Those who are named as such in the record, the claim, or those who have been properly served with process, they have been sued. Not one who is not in that context with the relationship. This also then gives effect to the McClung Court holding, saying that notice is effective when mailed. The Cannavates would have this court hold that notice to one extends tolling to all others noticed or not within the 2 year statute of limitations. We believe that is not the intent or the purpose of the legislature when it enacted the Medical Liability and Insurance Improvement Act. And if one will look at the intent and purpose in the first part of that statute, and we urge the court to look at the entire act its nature and stated intent and purpose, and to answer that notice to one does not toll the limitations as to anyone who's not been noticed. With all due respect to the distinguished courts of Amarillo and San Antonio, who have recently held otherwise, we believe that those, while justice might have been reached on an individual basis in those cases, that they have gone beyond the intent and purpose of the legislature in enacting that statute and have ignored the statute to reach the holdings in those cases.
So what does the last clause of 401C mean?
Potential parties, Your Honor? One who has been noticed within the 2 years and who can be sued, who is potential to that lawsuit.
Why put that clause on? That adds nothing to this matter. Might well be left off, shouldn't it? Obviously, if you give somebody notice, it applies as to that part.
That's right, it does, Your Honor.
So why add the clause, effect shall apply to all parties and potential parties?
I think parties, again, Your Honor, are those who have been sued within the 2 years. Potential parties are those who have been noticed within the 2 years and who can be sued. That is the potential aspect of it.
Why add it on there? That goes without saying, doesn't it? Act 401A. You give a person notice, the statute is told as to that person. So why add on this tolling shall apply to all parties and potential parties?
I think, Your Honor, again, if you look at the legislative history that's been attached to the brief, something happened between the Senate and the House, and that was a provision that was going to be on to the committee that would have looked at a health care liability claim before it was went to suit. It was taken off of that, and somehow or another that was left in there.
This circuit says there's a conflict between those provisions, and one must be dominant, the other subordinate. You don't agree with that either?
I think that A has to be dominant. A combined with A combined with the mandatory 2 year statute of limitations, notice to each, A before C, and that is how that works. Notice as provided in this act, and that has to be again combined with your statute of limitations, which is 2 years.
If a client walks into your office the week before, 1 year and 51 weeks after the cessation of treatment, and ask you to represent them in their potential medical malpractice case against their family doctor, and you ascertain that there's reasonable grounds to give notice to that family doctor in the interim, or I should say concurrently, the 2 year statute of limitations would run as to all other health care providers, but by giving notice to the family doctor, you would have extended it under your construction 75 days to allow for negotiations and to allow you to file suit if those were unproductive. But there would be no opportunity to sue any other potential parties, any other physicians who may have been involved in that patient's health care, would there?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, Your Honor, I believe that is the construction that would be placed on the statute by the plaintiffs, that they could sue anyone within that time frame and then sue additional parties. And we're saying that this is a statute of limitations.
You're saying your construction, as I understand it, is that you could not sue anybody in that hypothetical except for the family doctor, because that would have been the only one for whom the statute would have been told for 75 days, or there would have been an additional 75 days tacked on to the 2 years to sue.
I believe that's accurate, Your Honor.
But during the negotiations, during the exchange of information that might ultimately lead up to a settlement as to the family doctor, any other health care providers that you become aware of during that 75 days, limitations would not be told, and the statute would bar any suit against any other health care providers.
Just as it does with other statutes of limitations, unless there's fraudulent concealment or a minority situation that would have let the statute run. The statute of limitations is absolutely 2 years.
Well, there'd be discovery rule would apply in almost every other context, wouldn't it?
Possibly so, depending on the facts of the case.
You mentioned the strange thing happening between the Senate and the House. That does happen sometimes, I guess, but if there's been a review of the committee tapes and the floor debate tapes on this legislation to see if there's any discussion that cast any light on this issue.
If you will look at the appendices to the brief, the Senate debate notes and the House debate notes are there. If you'll look at the sequence of them, the Senate is presented first and then the House falls after it. The House takes issue and does not accept the Senate redraft or alteration of the bill that the House presented. And one of the aspects of that House bill that appears to have been tinkered with by the Senate, so to speak, and then not accepted was the notice provision and was also this committee provision. And if you look at some of the language of the representatives in the floor debate, they do talk about how the Senate sort of messed things up and didn't follow through with what the House had done. So then it went to a conference committee. As I understand it, it was recommended to go to a conference committee. And from there, we got the legislation that was enacted, which kept some of the language from both. And that is the extent of the legislative history that we've been able to find. We urge this court to hold that suit can be brought only after notice to each physician or health care provided as provided for in the Act within the 2-year statute of limitations. Another aspect of this that I'd like to mention briefly is that I think to hold otherwise then effectively can move the 3-date scheme, which triggers a claim for medical negligence, in that if you allow notice to one physician or health care provider to trigger tolling, then that is tolling as to physicians or health care providers who have absolutely nothing to do with that in that person's act of negligence, and then you have a finite date or a date certain for a tort to be, the statute to begin, takes away from that 3-day scheme. We urge you to answer the question so as to affirm the summary judgment in favor of these three doctors. Thank you.
Any questions? The court is ready to hear argument from the total counsel.
Mr. John Ellis will continue arguments for respondents for the next 10 minutes.
Good morning. My name is John Ellis, and I have a law firm in Houston. This forum is down there practicing. Today, I'm privileged to represent Dr. Robert Davis and Dale Burbridge. Dr. Davis and Dr. Burbridge are general surgeons. They were the individuals who operated on Mr. Canavati. They are not associated in any respect with the diagnostic clinic. They are simply surgeons that have privileges at diagnostic hospital. So, and the reason I mention that is the idea of notifying and putting on notice a party such that it can be in a clinic setting would not hold true. These are physicians who have separate practices from each other and certainly separate and distinct from the clinic. I endorse and adopt all of the arguments made by Ms. McCullough and would also urge that you find in the negative the first question that was certified to you by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. It is important for me to go over 3 dates with you for each of my clients with your indulgence, even though they're in our briefs. Dr. Burbridge performed surgery on Mr. Canavati June 25, 1986. He saw him briefly in the emergency room September 14, 1986. He never received any notice within 2 years and did not receive notice until November 10, 1988. Dr. Robert Davis performed a second surgical operation on Mr. Canavati August 9, 1986. He saw him occasionally even in Mr. Canavati's hotel room for a visit between September 10th and the 25th of September, 1986. Dr. Robert Davis never received notice of any claim within 2 years until November 10th, 1988. The 2-year limitation provision enacted by statute may be told for 75 days, provided there is notice that is sent within that two-year period.
Mr. Ellis, doesn't it seem a little unusual that to say that failure to give notice bars the suit when, if it had been, if your client had been sued within 2 years, the failure to give notice would entitle him to an abatement at best?
If I understand your question, the abatement that is envisioned in Sheps only applies if notice is given within that two-year period. I think it's important to note, at least from the plaintiff's lawyer's standpoint, to respond to the question that you posed to Ms. McCullough, that there is no way that a plaintiff's attorney, upon interviewing a plaintiff or a plaintiff's family, to miss the surgeons. Those were the key operatives, and therefore the only election not to sue them within the two-year period falls simply on the oversight of the plaintiff's attorneys. If no notice is sent within that two-year period and the lawsuit is not filed in that two-year period, the lawsuit is barred. To discuss for a moment the questions relating to parties, the law appears to be quite clear that parties are simply the plaintiff and the defendant. Potential parties under the statute would be those parties that have received notice. If no notice is given, they are not potential parties. If they are not sued within the two-year period, their claim is extinguished. If we can agree that the undisputed facts, which were stipulated before the Honorable Judge Hoyt, are that 1001 is the applicable two-year statute of limitations, that suit was not filed against my clients, Dr. Davis and Dr. Burbridge, within that two-year period, and that no notice was ever sent to them in that two-year period, therefore, the statute bars any lawsuit against my clients. Upon those facts, Judge Hoyt granted summary judgment. 401C does not state that the notice shall apply to all parties and potential parties. 401C says that the tolling provision shall apply only if proper notice is given. Therefore, there is a dominant and a subordinate clause in that legislation by its very nature, I would submit to this Honorable Court.
Mr. Ellis, how would you answer Justice Heck's question that if a potential party is one who's received notice for whom the 75-day tolling period would apply, and a party is one who's already been sued before the end of 2 years, then what was the purpose of the final sentence in the second section?
The final sentence about potential parties?
Yes.
I would simply suggest to this court that simply has to do with those people that have received notice.
But if they've received notice, the 75-day period applies to them anyway. They've already been sued, and there's no function to an additional 75 days on the tolling period.
Yes, Your Honor. But under the facts of this case, no notice was ever received. My clients didn't receive notice until November 10th of 1988, and the lawsuit was filed 1 week later. If you discuss for a moment the 60-day abatement or the 60-day negotiating period that is envisioned in Sheps and in the statute, each and every defendant or potential defendant is entitled to a full 60 days. My clients had 1 week, actually 8 days. They never even got the 60 days. And I think that it's a situation that can be extrapolated where you have a situation where they have the 60 days from the time that they are given notice. And if in that 60 days they find yet another radiologist or dermatologist or some lesser treating attending physician, he's entitled to his 60 days. There has got to be an end to litigation, and the end is 2 years. It can be extended if notice is given within those 2 years. My clients never received notice of a lawsuit. The plaintiffs must, therefore, either file their lawsuit within 2 years or give notice. And under the facts of this case, they did neither. We urge you to answer question number one in the negative and permit me to briefly address, as I perhaps have already done and spilled over into question number two, having to do with the effect of the notice, which triggers the 60 days. If that 60 days places the claim beyond 2 years and 75 days, the act would be meaningless, and that is our whole purpose, and the claim would be barred. But as far as Drs. Davis and Burbage are concerned, the first time they ever received notice was 2 years and 61 days after the last visit to this particular patient. Furthermore, if you have a separate 60-day period to each potential defendant, it will add on and on and on, and there must be an end to litigation. When they talk about the ability...
That's true, however, only if they're filed, they're sued within that 75 days, since assuming they have a maximum of 2 years and 75 days. The statute is told for 75 days.
That is prob-
notice would still have to be given within that period. It's not endless. It's 2 years and 75 days.
Well, I submit to you, Your Honor, that the way the statute reads of the 2 years and 75 days, it might be endless because each defendant is entitled to a full 60 days to negotiate, to compromise, or to investigate. So I think there is an inherent conflict in the statute from that respect.
How can it be endless? So you've got a finite number of parties. You've got a finite number of days. The maximum that if someone was noticed on the 2 years and 75 days,
yes,
on that last day, the maximum that could be extended or filed suit, and they're entitled to a 60-day abatement, would be to add 75 days to that 2 years and 75, or 60 days to the 2 years and 75 days.
That's right.
Correct? So it's finite. It's not endless.
I don't think that it is, Your Honor, and it's certainly a hypothetical situation where what may occur...
The abatement applies to the individual, and the tolling applies to all parties. That individual is entitled to 60 days, but the 2 years and 75 days applies to that party and everyone else, or that potential party and everyone else.
I see your point.
If the suit is filed of 2 years and 75 days, the maximum that person's lawsuit can be effectively extended is 60 days beyond that.
I would certainly argue that's the way it should be. I would just suggest it may be hypothetical and might be different.
Can you tell me again let's suppose there's three doctors out there and they sue one on the 2 year and 75th day. Now, how under your parade of horribles reading of this statute can it be extended?
Well, I think Mr. Justice Gamma just pointed out, it should not be extended, but there is that hypothetical possibility because during the 2 years and 74 days, they give notice, they decide to sue as they almost did in this case, there's 2 years and 61 days, the surgeons, and if in that period of time, perhaps they then pick up an assistant surgeon and give him notice on that very same day, that assistant surgeon is entitled to a full 60 days. Pardon?
On which day?
On the 2 years and 74 days. If they were under that period of time when they get the surgeon's records, because they've sued him for the first time, given him notice and sued him, which is almost exactly what happened in this case, and they pick up the assistant surgeon, that assistant surgeon then is entitled to a full 60 days.
But if it's after 2 years and 75 days, how can they sue this?
Well, it should be stopped. I would submit to your Honor that that's exactly what should happen. But in a hypothetical situation, it would be dangerous if that were to be otherwise. And I think there's that potential, given the plaintiff's theory in this case. My time has expired. Thank you for your courtesy.
Any other questions? Thank you.
May it please the court. Section 4.01C provides as follows. Notice given as provided in this act shall toll the applicable statute of limitations to and including a period of 75 days following the giving of notice, period. If the legislature had intended, as many of you have pointed out, the 401C to mean what appellees say it means, they could have stopped there, but they didn't. They added, this tolling shall apply to all parties and potential parties. This has a meaning, and it should not be written off. It should not be amended to add awareness or the new interpretation that we now get from Mr. Ellis that it includes everybody but surgeons. And if it is going to be amended in that effect, it should be presented to the legislature for hearings and revisiting the statute, the act abolished the discovery rule, and I don't oppose that. I'm quick to understand that. But that was the source of all the uncertainty that they're saying is caused for the insurance, the discovery rule. That's how the legislature resolved all the concern about the uncertainty of insurance. But to balance that, I think what the legislature did, and the legislative history is not helpful on this in one way or the other. The only thing it says is that that there was a notice, and one of the senators said that the medical lobby was opposing the notice. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it's in the history that they have presented.
Black, sorry to interrupt you.
Certainly.
You have a situation where on the 2 years you sue the doctors. An abatement to allow 60 days for the notice. The 75-day tolling period is tied to giving the notice. Is there anything, accepting what you say is the rightful interpretation of the statute, is there anything in the statute then that would require the first notice to be before the statute of limitations runs, such that the 75 days is tacked to the original 2 years? And is there anything in the statute that, once we say that interpretation, wouldn't prevent or would prevent someone from coming in on the 74th day after the 2 years have run, sending a notice to another defendant, getting another 75 days statute of limitations, and sending a notice to another defendant and getting another 75 days as to all potential parties who had not thus far received notice? Is there anything in the statute that would help us to say, well, yes, you get a first 75 days as to the whole world, but no further?
I think the statute is clear that that is all you get. The statute says it's told for 75 days, and this tolling shall apply to all parties and potential parties. This tolling. This was the issue in the Rhodes against McCown. That was the main issue, and that's what the court decided, that you can't tack on to this. The purpose of the statute was to give one 75-day tolling period, and that was to apply to all parties and potential parties, whether known or unknown. The Rhodes case is from the Amarillo Court, because I think the writ was denied by this court, if I'm not mistaken. And the Rhodes case is another illustration of what I'm talking about, because in that case, the facts were that Dr. McCarron, who was the defendant, who was not sued, not given notice within the 2 years, they found out about Dr. McCarron, long after even the lawsuit was filed. And they discovered him in discovery of other defendants and found out that Dr. McCarron had been involved. And I think he was a surgeon. And the court said, that's what this statute is about, 4.01C. And it's too bad that Mr. Rhodes didn't sue within the 2 years and 75 days, which he did not do. My time is up. If there are no questions,
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief recess.